Don't touch that dial. You're listening to Board Games Daily, your daily dose of tabletop gaming discussion on Anchor. Now welcome your hosts, Jeremiah Isley, Scott Firestone, and AJ Skifstad.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back for another episode of Board Games Daily. My name's Jeremiah Isley. We're so glad you're here. We got a pretty packed episode for you today. Scott's here. He's going to give you some recap of his recent game night. Sounds like he had a pretty good time. So we're going to hear about that. And I believe he played, was it Age of Innovation? Yeah, that's what it was. So he's going to let us hear all about that. He's got some great thoughts on that game. We also have the winner of this week's Game Night Cage Fight. I'll be bringing that news to you as well just in a few moments. And of course, I'm going to wrap up this week's topic, which has been the Lorcana hype and CCGs. So that, I mean, that's it for now. Like, that's a lot. We're super happy to bring this to you. As always, we love it when you interact with us. You can do that by getting on the old social media things, which are Instagram, Facebook, and of course, X. All of those, you can find us at Theology of Games. You can also email us, theologyofgames@gmail.com, or go over to theologyofgames.com and click that contact us button. Hey, I'm going to get out of here. We're going to get on with the show, but we love it that you're here and love it that you're listening. Thanks so much for being a part of this. We can't do it without you. So here we go. Another episode of Board Games Daily. And as always, we're powered by Theology of Games.
Hey everyone, it's Firestone here with Board Games Daily, powered by TheologyOfGames.com. And have I got news for you? Okay, it's not big news to you maybe, but it's big news to me. I played Age of Innovation. Now, this is the hot new game from Capstone Games, and it is called a Terra Mystica game, quote unquote. And basically what it is, to boil it down, it's Terra Mystica 2.0. If you have played Terra Mystica, it is very, very similar to that with some new stuff. Probably improvements. I suppose that depends on your opinion on the new game. But also has pulls some things in from Gaia Project, but I would not say that there's a ton there. It just feels really, really similar to Terra Mystica. But one of the things that's so different about this is it's very, very modular. So, in the original game, land types were tied to factions, and in this game, they are not. So, in the original, if you were the Giants, you were, I think, brown. It's been a long time since I played, but you were always that. And if you were the Black, you were always the, I don't remember what they're called. Anyway, all those races were tied to the lands, but in this one, it's not. So, each of the lands has a special power. And then the factions have special powers, and you'll actually be auctioning them off. Now, in the first game we played, there's kind of a variant where you just basically randomly put a faction with a land, and then you kind of draft that. But in the actual game, you're intended to auction these things off. So you decide, I really want this land. Then there's another auction. I really want this faction. And you'll put them together. And then, of course, there are the round bonus tiles. So, again, very similar to Terra Mystica, but things like that, modularity, are very different and give it a ton of replayability. You'll also have, just like in Gaia Project, you'll have they're called competency tiles. Everything has a different name in this one. That's kind of frustrating, but They're competency tiles, which are basically bonus tiles that give you things during the round, that give you things immediately when you gain certain techs and go up in the quote-unquote tech tracks. So the cult track in Terra Mystica was dumb and made no sense. In Gaia Project, they're tech tracks, and they make sense. You're moving up in things and gaining things. This is, again, similar to Terra Mystica, but this time it's like a university, and you're going up on a scholar science track. And so you're putting scholars in there and gaining different colors, which gain you different tiles and things like that. It's still kind of goofy. But one of the things that's very different is this has a new currency, which is books. And you gain books when you gain some of these competency tiles. And so you might get a bump on the blue scholar track, and then two books. And what do you spend those books on? I'm glad you asked. There are these things called innovation tiles, and the game comes with 18 different ones, and you will put out a subset of them each game. So that's going to be another place that every game is going to be different, because you don't know which ones are going to come out. And they're basically things that let you give you cool advances and let you score things immediately. One of them lets you score where your top two scholars are in the university or whatever that is called. So that could be, you know, 20, 40 points right there. There are ones that give you round bonus, income bonuses. A lot of them let you place what are called neutral buildings now. And so these neutral buildings are part of your network and your cities and things like that. Only count for you, but it allows you to have two strongholds. I can't remember what they're called here because, again, everything is different. Monuments, I think they're called monuments. And so you can have two monuments out if you get this neutral one. So you spend the books on those innovation tiles and a few other things. So, for instance, in the original game, there were six power actions that you could do. Excuse me. And in this game, there are going to be book actions so that you can spend books instead of power to do certain things. Game comes with six different ones. You'll randomly put three out each game. So you can save up your books to buy the innovation tiles or to spend on those actions. And there's a few other things you can spend books on, but that's the majority of it. The game comes with totally different round scoring tiles. There are 12 different ones. And so, you know, a game is only six rounds. So, you know, you're randomly going to have half of those each game in different spots. So that'll affect things. This is an interesting thing. In Terra Mystica and Gaia Project, each faction or race or whatever you want to call them had a stronghold power. In this game, there are powers that you will grab when you build your stronghold. So it comes with 17 different ones. You put out, I think it's one for each player plus two others, something like that. So again, just a small subset of these. And when you build your monument, stronghold, whatever you call it, you pick which one of those you want. And so it's kind of a race. Again, it's so much variability in this game because you could have monks in a forest with a different palace tile and all these different things that are going to be different every game, depending on the game, depending on how you draft it, all that sort of thing. Mostly everything else is the same. I know that sounds like a lot that's different, but really, if you've played Terra Mystica, it's basically like, okay, it's Terra Mystica, plus these other little bits cobbled on, and certainly things different at the beginning where you're drafting or auctioning off the various sets that you want. I want this land type because it has this special power. I want this faction because they have this special power. And they're cool. They're not the same ones as Terra Mystica at all. So some of the factions are... pardon me, I keep coughing. So there are the felines. At the beginning of the game, they advance one level in two of the scholar disciplines. But whenever they found a city, they can advance three levels on science and one other discipline and gain a book of their choice. So they just get things when they make cities. The goblins, at the beginning of the game, they advance in two specific disciplines, and then they get a tool, which is the ore of this game. I don't remember what they were called in the original game. Workers? Again, why do you keep changing the name? It's so frustrating. So we kept calling it ore throughout the game because we've mostly played Terra Mystica. So you gain a tool or an ore, and then whenever they use a spade, they get 2 coins per spade. Just things like that. So lots of different powers, lots of different starting bonuses for each of them. It's really great. Those innovation tiles are fun. There's one where you have a special action that allows you to gain a scholar and 3 points. Scholars are the cultists of this game, or the, you know, it's just something. You can immediately gain a one-time bonus of 2 points for each of your workshops on the board. So if you've really been doing that, then boom, you can get a bunch of points. When you pass, you gain 5 points for each school you have on the board, which is the, I don't know which building it is. It's the one that has 3 of them. It's so hard to keep the name straight. But anyway, there's a bunch of different innovation tiles. And then the palace tiles are ones where you have a special thing that lets you terraform and build with 2 free spades. Just you. Or you can get 5 power movement as an income and you get 2 ore. Or you, let's see what else we have here. Oh, you get to place a neutral building, or sorry, you get to place a, you get a 10 points and gain 2 power every turn. Just things like that. The one I had in my game, I really wanted to race to get this one, and I can't see it right now. I'm looking on the board. I don't see it. Anyway, doesn't matter at all. It's cool. Like this whole, the whole thing of choosing which one you get when you build your stronghold, it's a race. And so a couple of people might want one, and you, now you're like, oh, I really want to build that thing for other reasons besides just being able to do this cool thing. You get to do that specific cool thing that you want. All right, I've gone on for 10 minutes now, but just know that this game is really great. It's really fun. If you like Terra Mystica, I don't... Here's the deal. As I was playing it and afterward, I was like, ah, crap. I'm going to have to sell Terra Mystica and pick this up. Because I own Terra Mystica and I've played it a few times. I have the Fire and Ice expansion, which I thought was okay. I've only played it once, but I just thought it was okay. And honestly, I haven't played my copy of Terra Mystica in probably 6 or 7 years. Age of Innovation is better, in my opinion. It's more engaging. I love the modular pieces of it and how that will change every game in drastic ways and in interesting ways. It's so good. Now, it is very expensive for just this base game, kind of like Gaia Project was. It's $100 MSRP, which is a lot. And you know there are expansions coming. So what is that going to look like? How much is that going to add to it? But I'm telling you, you know, when you talk about games that fired other games, in many ways, for me, Gaia Project fired Terra Mystica, and Age of Innovation is firing Terra Mystica as well. And I just need to accept that and finally sell my copy because I'm just not going to play it again. So is the hype worth it? In my opinion, yes. We totally enjoyed that game. I think everybody that played liked it. We're all big fans of this Terra Mystica Gaia Project universe and the games in it. But honestly, do I see myself ever choosing to play Terra Mystica again? Not really, no. So anyway, those are my thoughts. If you have played this game, let us know what you think. It's sold out everywhere, but a second edition, second printing, I should say, is coming, and it's supposed to be here before Christmas. And you know what? I'm going to pre-order it because it was really, really fun. I know the segment is long. The game is long. The MSRP is huge, but Age of Innovation is really worth it. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
Hey everyone, Jeremiah back here, and I'm going to discuss this topic that we have been discussing all week, And that is the hype around collectible card games, trading card games. You guys, if you're in the gaming world, you know Disney Lorcana has been blowing up. People have been spending tons of money, tons of time, tons of resources trying to find these cards and get a hold of them and play the game. Also, they're making so much money because not only are the gamers after it, but the Disney adults are in full force out there collecting it. I'm in a couple groups on Facebook where they sell the trading pins that you can get at the parks, and they're all in on these cards as well. So they're not only my watch is talking to me. They're not only doing great in the gamer industry, but they're crossing over, which is what Disney does, you know. So we have been talking about the craze of collectible card games. Scott shared, you know, some pretty personal history and thoughts about collectible card games and sort of the addictive nature of them, that chase for the best cards, chasing rares, chasing ultra rares, all that stuff. And I'm probably in the middle of the road on this. I did start, I guess, my first sort of foray into not Monopoly tabletop gaming was collectible card games, Overpower. I never really played Magic much back in the day because I don't know. It wasn't my thing. I grew up in a very Christian home, and there was a lot of stuff about those cards that didn't sit well with myself. And of course, at the time with my parents while I was living home, that's a whole other discussion. But I did play the heck out of some Overpower, and also Middle Earth, the collectible card game, which was fantastic. Very ahead of its time, if you ask me. I really wish that game would have survived longer. But I think, you know, a game that's based on a book or sort of universe definitely has some restrictions, because there's only so much to work with. Now, granted, Tolkien's world has a ton to work with, but you can only go so far before you're just making up stuff, right? So I think where Disney's really smart and going to make a ton of money on this is they're including their entire universe, right? So they have endless resources and possibilities of cards and expansions and characters and so forth. But I don't know. I actually told AJ and a friend of ours, like, hey, if you're out buying cards, get me a starter deck of Lorcana. I want to play it and see if it's a good game. I don't know if it's a good game. If it's a good game, great. I'll buy a couple starter decks and a few packs and have some fun with it, and it'll sit on my shelf until I offload it. But I'm not buying into the hype. I've done that, been there, done that. I don't need to do that. I'm really not out here to chase rare cards and collectibles and that kind of thing at all. But I'd like to see if it's a good game. Have you played it? Is it a good game? Let me know what you think. Hit us up. I'm out of time. We'll see ya. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for us to reveal the winner of this week's Game Night Cage Fight. That's right. We sent out posts all week long out on X and Instagram. If you're following us there, you got your vote in, and that's pretty awesome. We put up three games this week, all in the same universe: Race for the Galaxy, Roll for the Galaxy, and New Frontiers. We voted, you voted, and we have a winner. This week's winner is Race for the Galaxy. Do you like that dramatic pause? Yeah, so I just think Race for the Galaxy won out. It's the first one of the series. That's the first one in that sort of universe or galaxy, as I pointed out last episode. And I just, I think it's great. I have to say, it was literally a coin toss for me between Race for the Galaxy and New Frontiers. New Frontiers is really, really fantastic. But man, I just think Race for the Galaxy was so groundbreaking, and maybe it wasn't groundbreaking, that's not the word, but it was just really, really solid. So I'm super happy that it won. I think it's a great choice. You all are so smart. What will be our next cage fight? Well, we don't know yet. We've got the weekend. We're going to cool off. We're going to recover from this fight. And Monday, we're going to come back with a new one. Hey, if you have a great idea for a cage fight, let us know. Hit us up out there on the socials. You can message us through all of them, Instagram, X, Facebook. You can even put a message, if you're listening on Spotify, we'll put a little question there and ask you what you think the next cage fight should be. You can write to us there and have your input put in on that. So, all right, I'm out of here. That's it for today's Board Games Daily. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're really glad to be back and be doing this. Theology of Games has been around for 10 years, more than 10 years now, and we're glad to be back creating content for you. We'll see you next time. Until then, I'm Jeremiah Isley for AJ Skifstad and Scott Firestone, saying thanks for listening and get yourself a game on the table.
Thanks for joining us today. Board Games Daily is powered by TheologyOfGames.com. Don't forget to head over to TheologyOfGames.com to check out all we have to offer, including written reviews, our YouTube channel, and two other podcasts. If you enjoyed this show, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you're listening. Thanks for listening, and go put a game on the table.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for this week's Game Night Cage Fight!
And in this corner,
two games enter and one game leaves. Who wins? You decide. Vote on this week's cage fight by going to Twitter at Board Games Daily. Or call in 216-352-3864.
Winner and still champion!